There's no wrong time for a good book, but as we tape this, many people are stuck at home more than usual, which makes it an exceptionally right time.
So we're here to pass on some book recommendations. We hope we'll make your isolation feel a little less isolated. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're giving book recommendations on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Here with me and Glenn from her home studio bunker is writer Katie Presley. Hi, Katie.
Howdy.
Good to have you with us, of course. So we are going to talk about some books. We should mention at the top, or I should mention, that my own book was published by Ballantine, which is part of Penguin Random House. Therefore, neither of my recommendations here come from any part of Penguin Random, which is, you know, a big part of publishing, but we wanted to let y'all know that. We are going to start with Glenn. Glenn, what is your first book recommendation?
Before I get to the first book, let me just say this is a great time to throw yourself into something big like The Lord of the Rings, as I do often. And I actually haven't thrown myself into it, but I have thrown myself into all the reference books I nerdily keep that reference the flora and the fauna and the history of Middle-earth with all kinds of maps. Sometimes I just pick up The Lord of the Rings itself because sometimes it's soothing to have an old guy, an old British guy, describe a landscape to you for 3 pages using crazy words. It's soothing. But the book I picked first is Less by Andrew Sean Greer, L-E-S-S. It's a comic novel, not a comics novel. It's a novel that's intended to be funny. That's what I'm in the market for right now. It won the Pulitzer in 2018. It's about this gay writer who's about to turn 50 and decides to take a trip around the world. So right now it reads like a period piece, frankly. And while it is funny, there is this beautiful searching quality to it that really resonated with me. Because the central question it asks is one that my friends and I have been asking ourselves a lot, which is, what does gay aging look like? Now, I see gay aging in the mirror every morning, but I know it only too well. But like the first generation of out gay men were wiped out by a plague. So we don't have anyone to model. Like, we are making this up as we go along, which is exciting, but it's also scary. And the book really grapples with that in a very smart way. But the smartest thing about this book is the main character, Arthur, is not particularly insightful about himself. But the narrator of the book is. And all the characters Arthur meets are more insightful about him than he is. So by extension, we, the reader, become too. We are always 2 steps ahead of him until the ending, which catches you short. And it is, maybe for that reason, the most satisfying ending to a novel I can recall. The final image is so small, so beautiful, so right. And it's like the feeling you get when you reach that last image, it's like an advertisement for what fiction should do. It's like, this is what it's for. So that is Less by Andrew Sean Greer.
All right. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. We are going to go over to the great and good Katie Presley. Hello, Katie. What is your first pick?
Hi. My first pick actually dovetails quite nicely from Glenn's in that it is also about a writer. So my book is called Transit by Rachel Cusk. That's C-U-S-K. Transit is the second book in a trilogy. The titles from the trilogy are Outline, Transit, and Kudos, and I'm about halfway through Transit now, and I'm adoring it. So every chapter is basically just the relaying of a conversation that the narrator is a part of, and it's just a really masterful writerly experiment that Cusk is pulling off, because there are 2 stories that you're reading. There's the story that the narrator is telling you based on these conversations that she has. And then there's the story that she's leaving out by not telling you much of what she says and telling you hardly anything about her life. So she's having these intense philosophical discussions, and I hardly know what she's thinking. And then just little bits of her life will come out, and it turns out that she's going through something, and that is so compelling. It's observant, it's philosophical, it's lonely, it's gorgeous, thought-provoking, and it gives the reader a lot to do. You can read a beautiful story of conversations between brilliant people, and or you can read a really compelling, intricate portrait of a woman who is trying to figure out what her life, which it turns out has just radically changed, is going to look like going forward. You can see through what's being narrated into the story that the character is narrating. Highly recommend. Really good to just burrow into and read and then stare at the wall and think, because we've all got time to stare at the wall now. Again, that book is called Transit. It's by Rachel Cusk.
Well, thank you very much, Katie. I feel like as we have this conversation, although there are electronic methods of getting books into your hands really quickly, I think it's also worth mentioning that lots of independent bookstores are also stepping up and making it possible to order from them. They'll send it to you. You can pick it up. So it's just good to remember there are lots of ways to get books. And I think bookstores are trying particularly hard to be available to people. So thank you very much, Ms. Katie Pressley. So my first pick, if you imagine that all of us in our lives walk around with a little motto for our pop culture intake floating above our heads, mine probably says romantic comedy is harder than it looks. This is true with film, it is true with television, and it is true with books. And so my first pick is a book called The Hating Game by Sally Thorne. It's post-Bridget Jones in the sense that a lot of these books have now moved past quite so much of the sort of self-loathing and self-doubt to a kind of a more contemporary, often professionally set kind of story. This is one of those. It takes place between two people who work in the same place. It's sharp. It's sexy. It stays out of a lot of the worst habits of books like this, despite the fact that it also really embraces, I mean, it's right in the title, The Hating Game. It really embraces that trope of kind of the people who start off fighting and they're enemies, kind of, but then of course they're going to kiss and you know. And The Hating Game is a book that's a little bit more candy-like to me in the best way, in the sense that it's a very good quality romantic comedy. So that is The Hating Game by Sally Thorne. We are going to come back around to Glenn for his second pick. Glenn, I have to tell you, I know this book. Tell me about your second pick.
All right. It is Here for It by R. Eric Thomas, who a lot of folks might know. He's a very funny writer for Elle magazine. It's an essay collection that came out recently, and it's exactly what I need right now. He is a seriously funny writer writing about his life, his race, his sexuality. The prose is so charming, so breezy and confident, and the humor lands. There's a world of difference to me between humorous and funny. Humorous is an approach, is a tone. Funny is jokes. And he's making actual jokes and they land. And that is a tough needle to thread. Also, not for nothing, I feel such a deep kinship with him as a writer. There's a bit in the Alan Bennett play, The History Boys, that I kept thinking of. There's a moment where a character says, quote, "The best moments in reading are when you come across something, a thought, a feeling, a way of looking at things, which you had thought special and particular to you. Now, here it is, set down by someone else, a person you have never met, and it is as if a hand has come out and taken yours." And I felt that over and over again reading this book. I mean, he was a little goody two-shoes as a kid. I was a little goody two-shoes as a kid. He hates sports. I hate sports. He's gay. I'm gay. He's bald. I'm bald. He sometimes worries that he's not black enough. I always worry about that. You know, the phrase, a joy to read, is such a cliche, but it is a joy to read this book. And that's exactly what I need right now. That is Here for It by R. Eric Thomas.
Oh, thank you. And I got to put in a little plug. I have the audio of this one, and Eric reads it himself. And it does have particular additional charms in audio, including Eric doing his Grover voice, which you'll recognize from early in the book. Love it. Excellent, excellent choice, Glenn. All right, Katie Pressley, what is your second pick?
My second pick is called Wayward Lives, Beautiful Experiments by Saidiya Hartman. Saidiya just won the MacArthur Genius Grant last year, and this book just won the National Book Critics Circle Award, so I am not the only one reading it right now. I should also say a risk here is that I'm going to read the subhead of this book and no one will listen to the rest of this episode because they will be smashing every button on their computer to buy a copy. Here we go. Title: Wayward Lives, Beautiful Experiments. Subtitle: Intimate Histories of Riotous Black Girls, Troublesome Women, and Queer Radicals. I'll wait. So what I love so much about this book and Saidiya Hartman's work in general is she sort of probes at the lacuna in history, in the archive, the capital A archive. She wants to find the gaps in the stories we're told, especially about enslaved peoples and the diaspora and the building of lives by communities that have been historically oppressed. In the case of this book, she's specifically investigating the sort of mass movement of young Black women at the turn of the 20th century into cities, often alone. So they're moving by themselves from the country into the city. And the biggest cities, the biggest Black communities at that time were centered in Philadelphia and New York. So that's what she's focusing on. And I think one of the main arguments she's making in this book is the stories that she's telling are happening 20 years before the much more famous, i.e. white, sort of flapper movement. The women that she's writing about are young Black women, and they are participating in free love and open marriage and radical socialism and queer relationships. And they're doing all these things flying in the face of tenement laws and vagrancy laws that were specifically designed in that era to crush people like these women. These books, they read like poetry. She's got the empathy and flourish of a fiction writer. So I cannot recommend this book highly enough, especially if you are in information sciences in any form. Again, it's called Wayward Lives, Beautiful Experiments by Saidiya Hartman. So get thee to your nearest book acquiring locale and pick up a copy.
Thank you very much, Katie Pressley. My second pick, so I wanted to acknowledge that sometimes when you are reading, you want to be really deep into something. You want to really like dive deep and just stay in it for a long time. But also sometimes you want to kind of dip in and out. Sometimes you only have like you have 20 minutes while you're trying to make dinner or whatever. And I wanted to be in service of both of those ways of reading. And what I wound up choosing is the book Miss Manners' Guide to Excruciatingly Correct Behavior by Judith Martin, which is a big, fat book about manners. Now, I think we've talked on this show before about Judith Martin and how much we love her. She is famous, among other things, for the response to the question, how do I greet a homosexual couple? And her response was, how do you do? How do you do? And she's funny, she's progressive and bright, and she cares profoundly about using the idea of manners to actually make people's lives more pleasant, more warm, more connected, more appreciative. It's not, you know, if you see Miss Manners and you think, like, I don't want to read about forks, like, it's not that. She's an advice columnist who applies a very particular and specialized set of principles. And she's just a funny, spiky, interesting writer in a way that I don't think people always expect if they're not familiar with her. This is one of her kind of big dig-in books. You can find it in a variety of places. Again, it's called Miss Manners' Guide to Excruciatingly Correct Behavior by Judith Martin. And you can kind of tell from the title, the excruciatingly correct behavior part, that she always has a bit of a cheeky tone when she talks about this stuff. And I find her stuff just pure pleasure and delight. And I encourage you to track it down. And of course, as always, tell us what books you are reading or recommending during this time. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. If you want more book recommendations, you can check out NPR's Book Concierge, perfect for this moment, even though not designed for it. You can find it at npr.org/bestbooks. When we come back, it's going to be time to talk about what's making us happy this week, so come right back.
The following message comes from our sponsor, Chipotle, whose new queso blanco is made with milk sourced from Wisconsin farmers like Brianna Handel. Running a small farm isn't easy, and Brianna has seen many people leave the industry because of financial challenges.
I know so many older generation farms that are still so far in debt, and then they're just passing it on to the next generation and hoping they're going to get out. Well, they probably have to get into debt themselves to get started, and I don't want that for my kids.
To learn more about how Chipotle wants to help bridge the economic challenges farmers face, go to chipotle.com/farmers.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What's making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
So recently it was Stephen Sondheim's 90th birthday, and for his 80th birthday back in March 2010, there was a concert called Sondheim the Birthday Concert at Avery Fisher Hall in New York City. And there are more than 24 songs in this concert, all delivered by some of the most iconic Sondheim people you can think of. We would have been watching this, because we have the DVD, we would have been watching this anyway, even if it wasn't his birthday, because it's Sunday afternoon and there's wine. But we watched it. You know, I can't tell you what to do. I don't run your life. But if you just wanted to get a taste of this, the perfect taste, just type the words, "Could I Leave You, Donna Murphy," into any search engine. And what you will come away with is something that will just make your damn day. So that is Sondheim, the birthday concert.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Katie Pressley, what is making you happy this week?
Well, right off the bat, I have to say that I'm about to give you the greatest what's making me happy that I will ever give, because it is about my ridiculous family. Margaret Pressley is a 97-year-young Irish lass from Butte, Montana, currently living in Spokane, Washington. She recently spent her first St. Patrick's Day ever away from family. She's also, to her credit, my grandmother. And my family did an extraordinary thing last week for St. Patty's and gathered up a couple of my uncles, a couple cousins, went to the facility where she is now living and sang Irish songs to her from first the parking lot and then the lobby of the facility, which is, of course, on lockdown, full of immunocompromised folks and the like. And the local news picked it up, and it was the front page of the newspaper in Spokane, Washington. And then some other news places picked it up. Then several thousand people watched it and loved it and made them cry and made them laugh. So nice to know that several thousand of my nearest and dearest had the exact same reaction as I did watching this video of my family members singing to my darling grandmother. So if you want to watch a video of some silly Irish folks in a frigid-looking parking lot in Spokane, Washington, to a blissfully happy, crying elderly woman who happens to be the best woman I will ever know, please Google Visiting Grandma Spokesman Review.
Yay, that makes me so happy. Katie, I have to do a quick fact check with you based on something that I heard. Is it true that your grandmother, Margaret Pressley, was Evel Knievel's piano teacher?
I'm so glad you gave me the opportunity to drop that factoid, Linda. Yes, yes, that is true. Evel Knievel's family is another prominent Butte family. My grandmother taught him piano and cannot for the life of her understand why he chose that silly name, because he is such a nice boy.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Thank you very much, Katie Pressley. So as you may know, if you listen to this show, I am not a major game playing person. But as people settled in for some time alone at home or with family, there were a lot of people telling me when I asked what I should play on my Nintendo Switch, they're telling me that I should play Animal Crossing. Now, as of, let's say, Friday, I was basically like, I've seen Animal Crossing. I don't know if, I'm not sure. By yesterday, as we tape this, it's Monday. So by yesterday, Sunday, I was basically like, okay, my plan for the whole day is that I have to collect the fish and fossils so that the owl can open the museum. Because Animal Crossing, and specifically Animal Crossing New Horizons, which is the one that I got, is a game for the Nintendo Switch in which you are a little person on an island of animals, and you go around and you put things together with wood and rocks, and you catch fish and you catch butterflies with a net. And there are times when I play it and I think, what we're modeling here is go to a deserted island and capture all the fish and butterflies and use them for your own means, selfish means. But it is an extremely fun game, I have to say. So that is Animal Crossing for the Nintendo Switch, and it is what is making me happy this week. Before we go, we had a poll to talk about what show we should binge watch and do an episode about, and the runaway winner, I would say, was Schitt's Creek, which, as you probably know, if you watch it, is in its sixth season and final season. We are going to cover it next Friday, so mark your calendars for that. Start catching up if you want. And we would like to take some questions from you. You can send us a voice memo with your question. Send it to us at pchh@npr.org. These are not comments, but they are questions. And if you ask us a question, we may use it on the show. So send a voice memo with your question, again, to pchh@npr.org. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Glenn at G.H. Weldon and Katie Presley at Love Is Maroon. You can find our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy. Our producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music you're bobbing your head to right now. So thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, recommendations continue to flow also from our newsletter, which is at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here next week.
The coronavirus pandemic is changing everything really fast. So we have created a podcast where you can hear conversations and stories from NPR journalists who are covering the pandemic, the public health fight against it, and how the world is coping. I'm your host, Kelly McEvers. Listen and subscribe to Coronavirus Daily from NPR.